Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Blair Horner, Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Blair Horner is regarded by most of us as the freshest breath of air that you're going to get in Albany. Welcome, Blair Horner.
You're damning me with faint praise.
No, on the contrary.
Fresh air in Albany.
On the contrary, you're our guy, and you know more about a lot than most of us will ever know. So, first of all, let's talk about campaign financing. I'm fascinated by this because here you have a governor with, what, $33, $34 million in his campaign account. He is saying we should have campaign financing here where Bernie the bartender can run and every dollar can be matched with six New York dollars. And he says, I'm for it. Meantime, he comes here under the old system in which he's able to raise $33 million or maybe more by now and charge $50,000 for a ticket for a Billy Joel concert, although they warned me, they told me that that was unusual.
I'm sure it is. I mean, not too many fundraisers with Billy Joel.
$50,000 for a ticket to a Billy Joel concert. I hope it was a good one. And a lot of people giving money to the governor, like the real estate industry and, you know, and other
people.
The Koch
brothers.
And so what? No. Now, I know I run on at the mouth, but he's responsible for the Republicans being in control of the New York State Senate.
So let me just put this a little bit in context for the listeners. Just with the governor put in his budget a proposal to create a public financing system, to allow a voluntary system of public financing in New York State, and to do other changes to the state's campaign finance, lower limits, improved disclosure. It's all in this budget. And so we think that's a good idea because it sort of forces a debate on this issue, and there's never been one in New York State, a serious debate on changing the system. So that's a good thing. Let me just put that on the table. But you're right that the governor uses every single rule he's allowed to raise money and then creates new ones. Here's a fun one he had at the end of last month. He put out an invitation with no location for his fundraiser. It says, come join Andrew Cuomo, governor of the state of New York, at a fundraiser. The location to be disclosed upon RSVP. And by the way, $15,000 to get an RSVP. I've never seen that before.
There was a quote in the paper. Are you going to refer to that one? It was the best quote we have ever seen. Just because it's a closed meeting doesn't mean that it's not transparent.
Well, that was the governor talking about the budget negotiations.
Right.
That's a classic. The most transparent and open government in New York State history, I think, was the campaign promise.
Just because of disclosure. Didn't you work for him on transparency?
And I worked on a project called Project Sunlight.
And then you left.
That's right.
What'd you leave?
Project was done.
Yeah. Okay, so now there's
You know, when you work on these projects, I'm an old guy, you know, so you talk about
you're
the breath.
Old. You don't know what old means.
Well, I am in my 60th rotation of the sun. And so by any measure, I don't think anybody would call me a young whippersnapper, unless, of course, they were on a longer or later stage rotation of the sun.
Like but, 72 of them.
Well, so you're a young whippersnapper then, too. You know, so, yes, I worked for the governor, and I worked on this project, and, you know, I'm not the technical person, right? So the idea was to create at the Attorney General's office something called Project Sunlight, where you could sort of search government databases simultaneously, campaign finance databases, lobbying, government contracts, legislation.
Is that all there, still there?
It's all there.
Well, congratulations.
And so, you know, we get it started up, but I'm you know, what do I know? I'm like Coco the gorilla when I'm actually working on technology. Yeah. So, the people who actually know technology took the project over after I left, mm-hmm. right? So my part was done, and so I left. And well, for terms of full
well,
disclosure.
We love you, Blair, and you did the right thing. So you were telling
us. So it's not a personal thing with the governor on my point. It's just, you know, he's operating under all the rules as they exist. He's bending the rules as much as he can to raise as much money as possible because he wants to hammer to pieces his Republican opponent in November. And so that's true, right? There's no doubt about it. His proposal in the budget calls for public financing for statewide office starting in the year 2018.
Yeah, 2018. Where will he be in 2018?
If he gets reelected this year, it would be going up, if he was running again, for his third term. So you know, we don't even know if it's going to happen, right? The Senate Republicans.
Okay. Can I stop you there for a second,
of course.
Blair?
This is your show.
Not at all. I say this governor is known to me to be duplicitous is too hard a word. But what he does is he has things that he's for that he's not really for. And then he has things that he's for that he's really for. So, for example, when he wanted the gun control, he got it.
That's
he
right.
wanted it. He hammered it. He took people by the neck, not physically, but theoretically,
right. Right.
and he got what he wanted. He took his Republican people who had every reason to vote against gun control, but who knew that they had an angry governor on their hands.
Same-sex marriage.
Same-sex marriage, okay.
Budgets on time.
Yeah, budgets on time. Now you have this other thing. There's an other series of things that he's supposedly for, but that people like me, cynics of the worst order, think that he's not really for. He wants to be out front on him. He wants to say he's for him, but he's not really for him. Why would a guy who brought the girl to the dance leave with somebody else? The answer is he came to this thing. He's a master money raiser. The question is, does he really, really, I mean, really want
Well, no, in like 2 weeks.
Well, no, you won't know. Well, he'll put up his hands if it doesn't pass.
It doesn't.
And he'll say, it didn't work. The bad guys didn't let it happen.
Yeah, except he has a problem.
Yeah, what's his problem?
There are four people that are going to be around that table when they negotiate the budget. Three of them, ostensibly anyway, support public financing of elections.
Right.
Three of the four.
Okay, so who do you got?
Yeah, Klein.
Klein.
Co-leader of the Senate.
Yeah, you got Klein,
Speaker
the ostensible co-leader of the Senate. Right. Some people call him a collaborator. He's a Democrat.
Whatever you call him, but he's at the table.
He's at the table. Well, maybe
Speaker Silver at the table supports it. The governor at the table supports it. Dean Skelos at the table doesn't support it.
Let me ask you a question because I really need to know this. The Democrats in the Assembly have passed this bill in the past.
Right.
They like it. They support it. They right. say they support it.
That's right.
But they know there's a Republican Party, just like Cuomo knows, who are not for it. I've always wondered whether they would be as for it if they didn't know somebody was going to say no.
We will soon know, right? Because
no,
if the governor blames Senator Skelos for nothing happening, right? Let's just play it out. The Republicans dig in. They don't want to do it. They, in their 29 votes in the Senate, say that they don't want to do it. And the governor can't do any horse trading in a $140 billion budget to give the Republicans something that they want. That's the part where it's a tactical advantage for the governor to have put it in the budget, because at the end of the day, they call the budget the big ugly for a reason. All sorts of things get horse traded. If the governor wants this bad enough, he will make it happen in the budget. If he doesn't want it bad enough, it won't.
So says Blair Horner, my favorite.
You just said I was so smart.
You are.
Well, there you go. There's
no,
the answer.
You are smart. You know it. And walk down the street and ask three people what the name of the Speaker of the Assembly are and find out whether anybody knows. I mean, the point really is, you know, I know. But does everybody else know?
Well, they do now. They're just listening
to your
people,
show. I say, what do you like about Andrew Cuomo? They always say he gets things done.
That's right. I mean, after the end of the Pataki administration and then the catastrophe of the Spitzer-Patterson administration,
yeah.
I mean, the governor can rightly say he brought order to chaos. Now, the argument, you know, that some people would say on the policies are at what price, but whatever you say, he has done that. I mean, the government runs a certain way, which we haven't seen really since the Pataki years. It's run similarly to the Pataki years in the sense that it's very top-down, very command and control.
And maybe even very Republican.
Well, and certainly,
even though he's a Democrat.
Well, again, I'm a nonpartisan guy that doesn't really sort of, like that stuff. I mean, I just deal with whatever the beast is that's there in state government, right?
Okay, right? Fair.
And so the Pataki administration was very similar, very top down, very the commissioners really were not like cabinet style commissioners.
Yeah.
They just did what they were told and they were sort of like part of the system.
Right.
And that's what you see here now.
Without doubt.
And so he can legitimately say he brought order to chaos. And that will, I assume, be one of the major planks when he runs for re-election.
No question. That's what they're saying to me. In the end, do we get it or not?
If I had a farm, I wouldn't bet it.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet the farm either. And that's
but
what,
I don't have a farm,
and that's
so
what
I'll
been,
bet it.
And that's what I've been talking about.
No, but I think this is the best chance that we've ever seen in
the
35 years, because in the past, it's never been put in the budget. In the past, the governor never had in the Silver v. Pataki court case, which gave the governor extraordinary powers in the budget process. That's all a relatively modern phenomena. And so this governor is using this opportunity. If he gets it, it'll be because of him.
Now, the Republicans have put something about campaign financing.
Oh, yeah. What happens now for your listeners Both houses passed one house budget resolutions that refer to whatever it is that they want to see change in the governor's budget. The Senate resolution says that they're open to campaign finance reform.
Right.
And they don't say they support it, but they don't say they oppose it.
But it's there for a reason, obviously.
That it was there to sort of paper over the ideological differences between Senator Klein and his rump group of Democrats and Senator Skelos and the Republicans, who have an ideological opposition to campaign finance reform and probably political.
Tell me about the DREAM Act. It was defeated in the state Senate. Now, there's another good example of say one thing, do another.
Well, the DREAM Act allows the children of undocumented immigrants who are in college to apply for and get financial aid.
Like everybody else.
Like everybody else. They're already getting in-state tuition like everybody else. This would allow them to get at public colleges.
Right.
This would allow them to get financial aid like other in-state students.
Okay.
That's really all it is. So the assemblies passed it. The governor did not put it in his budget, which I'm sort of to this day puzzled by. Although he says he supports it, he didn't put it in his budget.
Well, he may have seen what happened a little bit earlier when he proposed that convicts be given.
No, but he said he supported that in February. He put his budget out in January.
Uh-huh.
He did not put the DREAM Act in there, and he never put in his budget amendments, his 30-day budget amendments in February, the changes necessary to fund his program for prisoners to go to college.
Right.
So that's sort of interesting, too, right?
Well, he went to the Black Hispanic Caucus, and he gave them what he thought, I suspect, they wanted to hear. Never expected that it would blow up the way that it did.
Or who knows, right? I mean, you know, you get into these sort of 15 levels. It's almost like political game of Clue. You know, did Governor, you know, Cuomo have the, you know, did he kill, you know, Colonel Mustard in the library with the nightstick, right?
It's like,
you know, you never really know. But as a practical matter, the governor never did that. He says he supports it. The assemblies passed it, and they put it in their one-house budget bill. The Senate did not put it in their one-house budget bill. Senator Klein was arguing that he would be the champion that would get it done. He forces a vote, which caught all the advocates, by the way, flat-footed.
Wait, it's a triple thing here. He forces a vote, but he knows he hasn't got the votes to win, but he forces a vote. He thinks he's going to get credit for forcing the vote, but in the end, it's all worked out by the shady guys in the back room.
Well, we'll see what happens in the budget, right? Again, it's going to come down to the governor says he supports it. The speaker has it in his budget, and the speaker, in his opening comments on the budget process, they have a joint conference committee where they discussed it. The speaker said, this is a priority of ours. Can it get done in a budget? It costs roughly, depending on the numbers, $17 to $25 million.
Not a lot of money.
Not a lot of money. It's sort of like a rounding error in a $140 billion budget. Can they get it done? That will hinge on whether or not the governor wants to make it happen. By the way, just an PS, there were more yes votes than no votes in the Senate.
Yeah,
but because the governor hasn't filled two of the seats, and there were
on purpose.
And who knows? And two absences, there were not enough votes there for the 32 needed to get it passed.
Well, yes. So anybody listening to this program says, if the governor doesn't want it, there'll be one way or another that you don't get it, right?
That's right.
Okay.
But if he wants it, he should get it. This is one, unlike campaign finance reform, where you have this whole sort of philosophic, ideological difference on public financing, the DREAM Act, the allowance for the children of undocumented immigrants to go to college with in-state tuition was done during the Pataki years.
Right.
Right. So there shouldn't be the same ideological problems that you have on this issue. So we're hopeful.
Shouldn't, shmouldn't. Let's go to
hope shmope.
Let's go to pre-K charter schools. There's a widespread belief that de Blasio overplayed his hand, although there are those people who say, you know what? He got what he wanted.
But just so your listeners know, this is not an issue that NYPERG works on. But he did push very hard to fulfill his campaign promise. I mean, the one thing you don't want to do when you run for office is make the central argument for running for office and then sort of drop it once you get elected.
So, for example, when Andrew Cuomo said that he was going to veto the self-serving apportionment bill, which allowed the Republicans to create own districts and therefore win and stay in power. And then when he won, he didn't do it. It was one of his number one priorities. Right. That's what you're talking about, that kind of thing?
Something like that. Mm-hmm. Although in that particular case, he's going to argue he got reform as part of the deal. A reform, by the way, that we think is not worth supporting.
You and me both.
Wind it back to de Blasio. He made this one of the central planks of the rationale for getting elected. He has to fight it to the death. And We'll see if he gets enough of what he said he wants, because we don't know what the budget's going to say yet. Right?
Okay, but does he look weak? Because it looks Cuomo ate his lunch.
Certainly on the public relations tactical side, he's taken some big hits. The polling numbers out today show that his approval levels have declined dramatically, and his disapproval numbers have doubled. So it's not.
They also show that people like him and think he's a strong leader.
That's right. So he's taken his hits. He's taking his lumps. The governor played it in a way to, it seems anyway, from sort of the outside looking in, to sort of teach de Blasio a lesson or something in terms of the public relations fight. But at the end of the day, if he gets pre-K for children that's adequately funded, you know, he's gonna run for re-election, presumably saying he accomplished what he said he would do.
And that gives us a chance to talk about whether Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive, might have been a little of Andrew O'Rourke in the old days who ran against Mario.
Well, we'll see if he has to carry around a cardboard cutout to debate him.
Yeah, well, you know, here's Andrew with his $33 million in the account. I don't think Astorino has anything like that.
Nope.
Why would he do it? Why would Astorino, you know, risk his prestige by running against Andrew Cuomo?
Well, that's a very good question. And I, you know, and now I'm way out on a ledge. It's sort of like punditry now. But when Astorino knocked out Spano as county executive,
he was a Democrat.
Longtime Democrat.
Astorino, the Republican, Westchester, which has more Democrats than Republicans.
2-1
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
He ran the first time. And if my memory serves me correctly, he lost.
Oh.
And the second time he won, and then the third time he won. So, you know, there could be a rationale that if he runs and does and beats expectations, that he's well positioned in 2018 as the leading Republican candidate, assuming that current Governor Andrew Cuomo doesn't run for a third term and moves on to greener pastures somewhere else prior to 2018. So, I mean, if you're looking at your sort of your career trajectory and you want to show that you can deliver on a campaign. And here's an example where the expectations will be quite low because the governor is very popular. He's got an enormous war chest. He's a ferocious campaigner. His people are going to throw everything they have at Astorino, including the kitchen sink, the plumbing, the wall that the kitchen sink is attached to, everything at this guy. And if he beats expectations, he makes into the 40s, for example, then he's well positioned, I would think, you know, in whatever he's going to do in the future. I mean, that would be one rationale to do it. It may be that he sees a vulnerability that the rest of us don't. I mean, you know, the governor has not really ever had a real race before. I mean, he's run for, he had his ill-fated run for governor in 2002. Which he backed out of when it looked like he was going to lose. In 2006, he ran and handily won the attorney general's nomination and election. And same thing when he ran for governor. So he maybe, you know, again, there may be something that Astorino knows that the rest of us don't. But certainly from purely a political trajectory point of view, if you beat expectations, that helps you down the road. And he's a young guy.
Why can't we have medical marijuana in New York?
Well, we're going to, according to the governor, right? There is going to be through his administrative action.
It's so stupid that we can give dying people or sick people or people with MS, you know, a chance. And we know it works now. There's been one study after another. Why is New York so slow on this?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the law's been on the books since 1980 that you can do it. It's been held up on the regulatory process on the health department side. I can remember talking to...
Is that right? In other words...
There's a law in the books saying that you can use it.
Amazing.
The problem was is there's a technical aspect to the law which made the implementation exceedingly difficult. By the way, this is not an issue I work on. And I can remember talking to Dr. Axelrod about this when he was health commissioner.
Best man ever served in state government.
He's quintessential public servant. His argument was that there were other therapies that were just as good. And so I thought the health department just wasn't that interested in trying to really make it happen. So the governor's arguing now that through his executive power, based on that law, that he will be able to institute it on sort of a pilot basis at a certain number of hospitals. I mean, I understand.
You named six hospitals.
Is it going to be a small number? Yeah. He's going to test it out. The governor, I guess, does not philosophically, therapeutically, whatever the reason is, does not want to.
So if you have MS in a place where they're not close to one of the six hospitals, you can go fish.
Or Colorado.
Or you could go to Colorado.
Right. And then you don't even need a script.
Yeah.
Or Washington. You know, the state of Washington, and you won't even need a script. You could just go for vacation and just don't get caught coming back with it in the airport.
What is it about these legislators that they can't relate to people's pain and suffering?
Well, I think as the boomers age, actually, you're going to see
people
more
like
of Colorado's
you.
And more of Washington's because, you know, of course, the boomers have a different cultural experience in the 1960s and 1970s than their predecessors.
So, Common Core, how are we doing on this? This is a level of nationwide. We want to know, we want kids to know a certain amount of stuff. I don't think anybody is arguing that we don't want the kids to know that. In other words, that the Common Core is not a good thing. What everybody's ticked off about is the implementation of the Common Core.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah, just so your listeners know, NYPREG does not work on the Common Core, just sort of, you know. But I think when you roll it out, the way the education department rolled it out, I mean, it really is sort of puzzling. I mean, it appears, again, to the outside, that they rolled it out without adequate preparation for students or the teachers to be prepared to give and take the exam.
No question.
And so I don't, you know, what were they thinking? I have no idea. I mean, that seems like the first question that you have to answer. And if the answer is nobody's prepared, why do you go ahead? The only, you know, possible reason that I can think of is they wanted to just drive the issue. They figured that if they slowed down on sort of the regulatory process, it would take forever to get this thing out. I mean, there's a whole sort of interesting issues that this has raised, I think, at the Education Department. You know, the Education Department used to develop their own tests, and increasingly they're relying on private companies now to do it.
Well, we all took the New York State Regents.
That's right. And so increasingly, though, they are relying on it, and they don't have – I don't think the agency has the internal capacity on sort of developing tests that they used to have on their own.
They just used last year's test anyway in the old days.
Well,
I always wrote my Spanish composition on my trip to Spain, no matter what they asked for.
Well, that's why you got the PhD. The rest of the people didn't get that. No, I just think as these agencies sort of get starved for resources, they end up relying on, you know, so I don't know. There's two different issues for me here. One is, what were they thinking when they decided to roll it out the way they did? And the only possible rational reason I can think of is they wanted to sort of drive the issue ahead, which doesn't make any sense because of all the collateral damage. And I think there is an increasingly important policy issue over who's controlling sort of the testing side of this. Is it the companies or is it the government itself? And sort of privatizing that aspect of it, I think, is troubling.
I wanted to ask you about Sunshine Week. You're an expert on letting sunlight flow in. Can you tell us whether we're getting any better?
Well, under the Cuomo administration, there's two things that are happening. The government this goes back to my job with him when I was at the Attorney General. I think the government is actually interested in using new technologies to make it easier for the public to get access to information. That being said, I think he does everything he can to keep from the public how decisions get made and the process by which government itself makes the determinations on what it wants to do. And so there's an obvious tension there. And on top of it, it keeps the public in the dark. So, for example, when he gets asked about, you know, these closed negotiations on the budget, and he says, well, sometimes being transparent, you know, means you can have closed meetings. You know, that doesn't make any sense. But I think he's made a political calculation that on that issue, the public cares more about whether or not you get things done as compared to seeing how the sausage is made.
Speaking of which, we're going to have an on-time budget. My friend Denny Farrell told me that, so I guess all the decisions have been made. Not like the old days when everybody used to play chicken with each other.
Yeah, well, you can't, because under these court decisions, the governor writes the extender and then the legislature's forced.
What does that mean, writes the extender?
Well, basically, if the budget's late, only the governor can write the bill that says we're going to keep the government open for some period of time. If you're the new governor, you put in a 12-month extender, and then the legislature's faced with closing down the government or agreeing to the governor's budget as written. They don't want to do that. They'll cut their best deal going into March 31st, and then they're done.
We are out of time. Our guest has been the fantastic Blair Horner, Legislative Director for the New York Public Interest Research Group, NYPIRG. Blair, I hope you'll keep coming back and keep speaking the truth to so many people. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.